It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 25th day of July, 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live. And where, if you pop into the chat room right now, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers. That's Squeaky and Theo, and capably moderated by, me. We'll see if competent moderation shows up later. Theo, Squeaky, behave yourself. And, of course, if you're listening to this as a podcast, then please accept the community's gratitude for being part of this ongoing conversation. Thank you so much. It really means a lot. And if you'd be so kind as to like and follow or subscribe or love or whatever the podcast platform likes, it'd be great. It'd be really helpful, and also be helpful if you'd leave a comment for the algorithms. Anything, pretty much. That's appreciated, much appreciated too. I appreciate it. To see, the active voice is always better than the passive voice. And I try to use it. I try to remember that and use it where possible. Hi, I'm Robin. It's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And that means, of course, today we take note of manifestations of truly titanic right-wing intellect. You know, the kind of right-wing intellect that you get, for instance, back in my bad old days of terrestrial radio, gracious sakes, 20 years ago. Hard to believe it's been that long. The Morning Monotone, who is sadly no longer with us, the Morning Monotone took a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers one day, who asked him, "Steve, how come it is that there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? I done seen them when I was down in the mines. We ain't nowhere near the beach." To which the Morning Monotone replied,
"Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates."
God, it was goofy and stupid then, and it's still goofy and stupid. Nonetheless, there's still no word on the whereabouts of the Titanic jello mold. It's probably buried under the debris of the remaining debris of the libertarian death thermos, for all I know. Sorry. So that's where we'll be headed. Every program at the Horn, however, begins with gratitude, because this is a non-capitalist, non profit-driven, non-commercial radio endeavor. And thus it exists on the goodwill of the community that keeps it going. So thanks. Thanks go out to David in Oregon. And thank you to Charles. Thank you so much. Thank you to Peter and Mark. Thank you all so very much for being partial sponsors of the program. And so the fundraising goal is at $1,989. Trying to stay under that $2,000 mark just for good luck. So 1989 to come up to even with where we are today. And let's see, there are, one, including this program, five broadcast days left. So the total fundraising to come out of July to the good is, dear God, $3,489. Ow. In other words, we are more than half unfunded for the month of July. And we'll see how long we can keep all of this going that way. Well, thank you, Theo, promising to behave himself in the chat room. No getting down on your own abilities. You won't have any of it from me, after all. Talking about misbehaving in the chat room. No. Squeaky and Theo can be, and everybody else can too. We just guard against the occasional Lulu or schmuck wandering in, because this program does not permit right wingery of any sort. Because they have all kinds of different places to go and be right-wing asshats. So, Titanic Tuesday. Let's get rolling. We know about the controversy coming out of Florida with Monkey Up DeKlantis's pet school board declaring that slavery had some positive consequences. Black people got marketable skills from being enslaved. And thinking that it's completely okay to say that. When it's actually a display of manifest ignorance and a pretty clear statement that the white folks saying that don't really have any appreciation whatsoever of what chattel slavery meant. The destruction of families, the bloody whippings, the murders, you know, chattel slavery. But it's possible to completely underappreciate just how damn bloody and dumb and bigoted and stupid maggots and Republicans are. Enter Greg Gutfeld from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. He is a host there. And yesterday, on that unwatchable thing they have called The Five, Greg Gutfeld showed up and they were actually discussing the idiotic educational standards about teaching about slavery in Monkey Up DeKlantis's fascist wonderland, Florida. The standards that say slaves developed skills which in some instances could be applied for their personal benefit. And one of the panelists, who is Jewish, Jessica Tarlov, said the Florida rule made her uncomfortable and said, yeah, what if we started making those same kind of arguments about the Holocaust and concentration camps? At which point, in proof of the law of nature set forth by Mark Twain, it is better to be silent and thought a fool than to open one mouth and remove all doubt. Greg Gutfeld decided to remove all doubt. Gutfeld said, trying to sound like an intellectual,
did you ever make man's search for meaning? Viktor Frankl talks about how you had to survive in a concentration camp by having skills. You had to be useful. Utility. Utility kept you alive.
And that's Viktor Frankl, a psychiatrist from Austria, who wrote a book in 1946, his autobiography called Man's Search for Meaning. Because Viktor Frankl was actually in 4 concentration camps and survived the Holocaust. Well, useful. I don't know exactly who Greg Gutfeld was talking about. But as I've said on a number of occasions, every marginalized group had had its own plague of collaborators and bootlickers and lickspittles. And there were in the concentration camps people called capos. I'm never sure if it's capo or capo. C-A-P-O or K-A-P-O. But those were Jews who tried to survive by being useful, I suppose, to their Nazi captors. Of course, they were later on killed anyway. I'm not laughing, but they were just trying to be the last to go because they were one of the good ones. One of the good ones, ism, also known as pick-me-ism, is toxic and noxious in any community. But every marginalized community has them. Well, the Auschwitz-Birkenau Memorial and Museum in Poland, I don't know how it is that they find out about this stupid, toxic, hateful bullshit that flows like a sewer out of... Well, I mean, Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda is a sewer. But they got wind of it. Whatever the case. And they issued a statement calling out the titanic intellect of Greg Gutfeld. While it is true, they wrote in a six-paragraph letter, while it is true that some Jews may have used their skills or usefulness to increase their chances of survival during the Holocaust, it is essential to contextualize this statement properly and understand that it does not represent the complex history of the genocide perpetrated by Nazi Germany. They did not hold back. Viktor Frankl's observation about the specific situation at Auschwitz, which at some point became a camp that connected the functions of a concentration camp and extermination center and where deported Jews went through the selection process, highlights how some Jews became registered prisoners and might have used their skills to gain favor or prolong their lives in that particular setting, yet it never gave them complete protection. However, we must not overlook the larger picture of the Holocaust. Nazi Germany's ultimate goal was to exterminate all the people it considered Jews. Nazis created their racial definition of a Jewish person. Millions of Jews were brutally murdered in execution sites, mainly across the east of occupied Europe, with entire communities wiped out regardless of their usefulness or contributions to society. While some of the ghettos seemed to have the goal of being productive and Jews were used as slave labor there, being useful did not guarantee safety as the Nazis eventually decided to liquidate them, leading to the murder of those considered valuable as well. There were no selections in extermination camps such as Treblinka or Sobibor, and almost all deported Jews were murdered upon arrival, irrespective of any perceived usefulness. Being skilled or useful did not spare them from the horrors of the gas chambers. Furthermore, during the final stages of the Holocaust, as the Nazi system was collapsing, concentration camp prisoners were evacuated to shrinking camp systems, resulting in the death of many. In these circumstances, being useful did not offer protection either, Greg Gutfeld. Therefore, while it is accurate to acknowledge that some Jews may have survived temporarily due to their perceived usefulness, it is crucial to remember that the Holocaust was a systematic genocide with the ultimate aim of exterminating the entire Jewish population. It would be more appropriate to say that some Jews survived the Holocaust because they were considered temporarily useful, and the circumstances of the Nazi regime's collapse prevented their murder. We should avoid such oversimplifications in talking about this complex, tragic story. That's a very heartbreakingly true and accurate recounting of the situation as it existed. And, of course, this was entirely useless where Greg Gutfeld is concerned because, well, Greg Gutfeld, Jesse Waters, Brian Kilmeade, Steve Ducey, all of that lot are just toxic white wing idiots in every classic sense of the word. Idiots. And so let's go and check out the audio to what prompted the letter from the Auschwitz Memorial.
Do you think that she read the whole thing and just decided to cherry pick something?
Now, bear in mind this is a conversation initially about Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris is lying, reads the Chiron. VP blasted over Florida's school curriculum on slavery. Because Kamala Harris called Monkey Up DeKlantis' pet school board out for the fucking racists that they are.
I do think that she read the whole thing, and I think that it's an incredibly complex piece. When you look at 191 passages, you have some good. And frankly, I'm just fundamentally uncomfortable with the sentence that blacks benefited at all from this. And, it made me think, as someone, obviously I'm not black, but I'm Jewish. Would someone say about the Holocaust, for instance, that there were some benefits for Jews, right? While they were hanging out in concentration camps, you learned a strong work ethic, right?
I don't know who Jessica Tarlov is, but I kind of object to even referring to hanging out in concentration camps. Because usually, hanging out is it's a choice. You know, let's go hang out down to the Tasty Freeze. Nah. I mean, you can go hang out at the Tasty Freeze, but I don't think any Jews in 1942 were saying, hey, let's go hang out at Auschwitz. And maybe learn a new skill. I don't know what those new skills would be.
Maybe you learned a new skill.
Did you ever read Man's Search for Meaning? Viktor Frankl talks about how you had to survive in a concentration camp by having skills. You had to be useful. Utility. Utility kept you alive.
But we're also talking about middle schoolers here. And there's a lot of concern about what age people are prepared to understand complex issues. I'm not sure that 12 is the right age to start hearing things like, and when you were enslaved here in America.
What about gender?
You did notice that last. What about gender? What about gender? Greg Gutfeld or Jesse Waters or whichever idiot said that. What about indeed? Well, whatever. But, well, here we are. And it's a fascist narrative, and we are in a position of responding to it. Because, see, otherwise, if you don't respond to it, it's like what I used to say about political radio. That Democrats, liberals, progressives, what have you, abandoned the field for decades, basically giving the entire entire conversation up to the likes of the Pineapple Prince, Rush Limbaugh. And so he indoctrinated a country, you know, those people who tuned into him and lacked the critical thinking skills to understand that he was bloviating a load of horseshit. While the Democrats said, well, we don't want to be like them. We're above all of that. We're about issues. Right? And with the exception of people like Mike Malloy, it was a field that was left open to fascist, right-wing, libertarian toxicity. And largely is to this day where terrestrial radio is concerned. Arguably worse now than it was then. And so we do push back against this mean-spirited stupidity. Meanwhile, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda has not responded, that I'm aware of, to the little mini-lecture that they got from the Auschwitz Memorial. But God, they're awful, and this is the road to ruin. I'm still shaken by that story of the 33 Italian children in Padua who were rendered non-persons. By the fascist Italian government. Whose identities were erased by an act of fascism in the name of the family. And remember, fascism always claims to be family friendly. FFF, y'all, family friendly fascism. And God, the stupidity inherent in the topics for Titanic Tuesday are almost eye-rollingly dumb. Here's one of them now. Wait a minute. Back to Fox for a minute. Matt in San Francisco says, at this point, it seems these people are intentionally being idiots just to get on a Titanic Tuesday edition of The Horn. It does seem like that sometimes, doesn't it, Matt? But they don't. The bottom line is they are openly hostile to marginalized peoples. And people like Greg Gutfeld share the same impulses. Because it does not matter how wicked or evil or nasty or vile or hateful a Republican position is, the Greg Gutfelds and Jesse Waterses of the world will always, the Steve Doocheys and the whatever, will always leap to their defense to find some way to say that it's okay. It's okay to be that way. And now they're mad at the U.S. women's national soccer team, or football as it's known in the rest of the world.
Women can't play football!
Right. The World Cup, the Women's World Cup, is being played in Auckland, New Zealand, or in New Zealand, and I think also in Australia. And Friday night, the U.S. women's national team played their first game against Vietnam and won 3-0. And prior to the game, all the teams line up for the playing of the national anthems. And some pathetic maggot noticed that they wasn't singing hard enough. They didn't sing the national anthem like they all sung it. Because there are purity standards for national anthem singing now. It should be noted that there is no rule that says any particular team has to sing their country's national anthem. In fact, in some instances, there are some countries who consider us genuinely weird for jingoistically insisting upon the playing of the national anthem every time somebody tips off a basketball game or faces off a hockey match or kicks off a football game or throws the first pitch in a baseball game. Gotta sing Francis Scott Key's racist old ballad that has the verse in it that we don't sing anymore and very few people know about that talks about how happy he, Francis Scott Key, would have been to murder some black people. It's really there. Yeah, sometimes I wonder. I mean, right-wingers are not welcome here, as I noted. But I wonder sometimes if right-wingers even know these things that we know. Because the Dunning-Kruger effect is powerful with them. And I wonder if they know that there's a verse in the national anthem that where Francis Scott Key talks about how fun it would be to murder black people. And I guess by extension, what kind of excuses they would make if that were in fact the case. Which it is. Steve in New York says, I'm going to disagree with you. It's not okay to be that way. It's good to be that way. And so, some right-wing jackass by the name of Simon Ateba, who is the chief White House correspondent for something called Today News Africa, Who knows who he is? Besides being an idiot. Well, Simon Ataba of Today News Africa, White House correspondent, was outraged. Outraged, I tell you. Outraged. Tweeting. Xing. No, I think we should call it scumming. He put out a scum, you know, named for the owner of that toxic platform, Leon Scum. He put out a scum saying,
what do you make of the fact that most U.S. women's soccer players refuse to sing the U.S. national anthem at the World Cup?
He's not even a U.S. citizen, I don't think.
Does that bother you? Is standing enough?
Because kneeling is definitely not okay. And there were probably rules for the U.S. women's national team. Y'all will not kneel at this national anthem, okay? And for all I know, FIFA has rules about it, too. Because maybe, I don't know, some FIFA people took bribes from Republicans or something. FIFA's all the time taking bribes. They've got a friendly little competition going with the U.S. Olympic Committee to see who can get the most bribes, I think.
Is standing enough? The 2023 Women's World Cup is being co-hosted in Australia and New Zealand.
See, they were already mad at the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team because their star, their superstar, Megan Rapinoe, had previously said that she would have no problem whatsoever with a transgender woman on her team. And this, in turn, created tremendous levels of butthurt on the part of, Martina Navratilova and Riley Grimey, the swimmer who tied for fifth with Leah Thomas and is terribly, terribly upset about it. I should have been fifth all by myself. And they both got their asses whipped in that particular race by a cis woman. But it's a good hustle. And she's making a good dollar off of it. But Megan Rapinoe got it right. And so they did the national anthem thing before the match started out, and the U.S. women's national team won their first game in the first round. You notice the tempo's a little off? I don't think I could sing to that either. The other thing Simon Ataba apparently did not notice is the fact that, well, there's a lot of people kneeling on the pitch behind the U.S. women's national team. Now, bear in mind, these women have their hands over their hearts, according to protocol. But again, in fascist world, displays of noxious nationalism are never enough. If these women had stood on their heads and sung it backwards, it would not have been enough. If they had marched up and down the pitch, it would not have been enough. Because another thing is that the U.S. women's national team has been kind of uppity, wanting pay increases and such, because, you know, as opposed to the U.S. men's national team, the women's team actually wins things. And they felt like it would be the right thing to do to take note of that. Yeah, everybody but the U.S. women's national team is kneeling. Of course, there's a blonde lady in the audience and an American guy holding up an American flag, and he's singing. And even one of the members of the U.S. Women's National Team is actually singing. And, of course, Simon Ataba also didn't mention anything about the fact that the team applauded after the national anthem. Which at one point in time it was deemed disrespectful to do. But now everybody applauds. God, I hate this! I mean, we talk about movies and things like that, and I say, well, we're going to be vacuous for a few minutes. This is vacuous! Fascism is inherently vacuous because it makes virtues out of bullshit and outrages out of thin air. And remember, the national anthem, the United States national anthem, is almost unsingable anyway. Oh, but the maggots got angry.
As an American, I'm not a big fan of soccer.
I'm sorry.
As an American, I'm not that big of a soccer fan, but after this despicable display by our women's team, I'll be rooting against them versus every single opponent they face. These other countries proudly sing their country's national anthem. These women are a total disgrace.
Another fan chimed in and said,
disrespect in our nation should not be allowed to remain on the team.
That sentence doesn't even make sense, but we're dealing with maggots anyway.
Protesting while representing the U.S. should not be allowed. They should be required to show respect or not play. I'd rather we forfeit than to allow this disrespectful act.
Now, bear in mind, most of these armchair warriors, members of Meal Team 6 and the like, they probably weren't watching soccer to begin with, but, well, Simon Ataba tweeted it, and so consequently, they felt the need to chime in and speak up for the new United States of America. And they may get their wish, because the U.S. Women's National Team plays the Netherlands on Wednesday night. And the Netherlands we're in the same grouping with the Netherlands, and they are a formidable team. So now everybody will be watching to see if the U.S. Women's National Team sings sufficiently lustily to satisfy the maggots in the crowd. Because the maggots must always be made to feel good about themselves. They want their maggoting participation trophy. Of course, there's a lot of reasons not to lustily sing the national anthem. Maybe that was on the minds of some of the team members. So at the bottom of this story, there was a poll question. There's always a poll question.
Do you think the criticism of the U.S. Women's National Team has received for not singing the national anthem before Friday's game was warranted or unwarranted?
Well, I clicked totally unwarranted. 59% of the respondents clicked totally warranted. That's a disturbing number. Because this criticism is fascism. It's just a kind of fascism. And Matt in San Francisco says, patriotism, nothing says patriot like rooting for the other team. I know. National anthem. Steve in New York says, as I recall, the orange stain is actually on camera not knowing the words, or at least just not singing it. And also putting his hand over his tummy instead of his heart. Sort of Napoleonically. But thank God for these idiots, because, well, where would Titanic Tuesday be without them? Lee in New York, stop it, Robin. Right-wingers not knowing history? They know everything. Each one can reassure you that they know everything and you know nothing. Kneeling is fascist, even though Colin Kaepernick was told by a veteran that it's respectful. All men are created equal. It says so in the Constitution, but it was the Declaration of Independence. The Constitution made slaves 3/5 of a person, but only for the census. Otherwise, they were not people at all. Vaccines make you sick. Pregnancies end in birth or murder. And all illegal immigrants come across the Rio Grande. No visa overstays. Taxes are theft, especially from billionaires. And they are not Nazis, but the Five said the equivalent of work makes you free. It sounds better in the original Klingon. Obligatory Star Trek reference. You know what? I missed that, Lee. I'm glad you pointed that out.
Well, they had to be useful.
Arbeit macht frei, motherfucker. True. And back to the benefits of slavery, Lee points out, and those Hebrews must have learned to make gold idols before Moses brought them to Mount Sinai. They were so lucky. Yeah. And then Lou, hey Lou, says,
freedom!
Maggots scream about the fundamental rights to freedom! Wolverines! For white folks. Apparently that fundamental right doesn't apply to people with more pigment in their skin. By the way, pursuant to fascist ideology, Lou asks, are you sure your Syrian-Egyptian heritage doesn't disqualify you from being Caucasian or some such? Aren't you really Semitic? It was a long time ago. I prefer to think that it was a member of one of the legions who was from North Africa or the Levant and got stationed, billeted, as it were, probably maybe in Londinium, because a lot of my ancestry's from the general Londinium area. Although we've got some Liverpudlian in me, apparently. This is the point in the program where I will not sing Ferry Cross the Mersey. Oh my God, it's another purity test. Thanks, Lou. And Theo points out having friends kept you alive in concentration camps. Hey, Robin. Hey, Theo. My late dad was among the liberation troops at Buchenwald in 1945, and one of those survivors was later known as actor-performer Robert Clary. According to him, literally singing for his meals to the kitchen staff bought him extra bread. Not much, but enough to ensure his survival. Monsieur Clary was later a star of the TV show Hogan's Heroes. I love the fact that Sergeant David Williams, my pop, had a hand in rescuing the future Corporal LeBeau. That's beautiful, Theo. And Robert Clary passed away in the last year or so, didn't he? Literally singing for his supper. And by the way, John in Central PA says, I saw that President Biden said the Republicans were his friends the other day. Now they're preparing to impeach him. It's shit like this that makes Biden look like a total schmuck. What was the point of sucking up to them? I get kissing their asses during important negotiations like the debt ceiling, but this fucking kumbaya shit in the face of blatant 200-proof fascist behavior all over the country by the likes of people he calls his friends, Biden is a progressive president, but certainly not an aggressive one. I voted for Biden in 2020 to stop fascism, not to play patty cakes with backstabbing traitorous thieves who seethe hatred for America and for you and I. These are the Nazis of our time. They are, John. But please bear in mind that my friend's business is capital speak. It is a form of stylized decorum that evolved out of the tumult of the mid-19th century when nobody was calling each other friends and they were beating each other with sticks and drawing guns in the well of the house. And sometimes you can tell in the intonation of the word, my friends, the freight that word is actually carrying, things like these miserable assholes. So don't be too hard on President Biden for using the language that he has used since, 1972 when he first went to the Senate from Delaware? It has served him well. And I'm sure that Marginal Trailer Queen and Clanny Granny and the Feedum Carcass are more than eager to impeach him, but it'll go nowhere. What I'm more bothered by, since you brought it up, John, is this mess that the weaker speaker, Kevin McCarthy, the man of silly putty, has gotten into a will he or won't he kind of thing, where he's talking about expunging the impeachment of Donald Trump from the records of the House. He said he would, and then he said, I agree with the idea, I guess, but I mean, I probably won't. Because he's scared, he lives in fear. Because Marginal Trailer Queen has his testicles in an old rusted lidded mason jar sitting in the back of her freezer. And every time he says something that displeases her, she just sends him a voice note of a knife edge going clink, clink, clink against the glass of that old mason jar. My patriotism and religion, spirituality, Steve in New York, says, I often don't sing the national anthem, and even when I was more religious, kept quiet. These things are very personal to me. I would rather express each with my actions. My father, the World War II vet, teared up every time it was played. Truly. John in Central PA says, I do forget that Biden is a politician and that language is part of his wheelhouse. I'll say this, he's doing a good job otherwise, no doubt about that. Seriously, there are sparkle farters who are praising him. Okay, look, can we have a vacuous moment? And now, a vacuous moment with Robin. I'm as prone to bias as anyone. And so the other night, when I was sitting, by the way, the start time for the film was 8:30. The film did not actually screen until 8:55. Because of all the ads and bullshit and trailers for the new Trolls movie. And there was also a trailer for a new DC comic book universe film called The Blue Beetle. And it's being hailed as a big deal. It comes out in August. And it's being hailed as a big deal because it is the it's the first superhero cartoon movie, comic book movie, to feature a Hispanic family and a Hispanic superhero. And George Lopez plays the dad. And one of the giggle lines in the trailer was someone saying something about Batman and George Lopez's character saying, "Batman is a fascist!" And once again, you know why? You know why Batman only covers half his face, so the police will know he's white. But as the trailer unspooled, I noticed, well, the villain in this Blue Beetle movie is none other than Susan fucking Sarandon. You remember Susan Sarandon. "Trump may be good for this country because even the lotus has to sprout from the mud." Remember her, Susan Sarandon? Big Jill fucking Stein fan? Because Hillary is the devil! Well, the minute I saw Susan Sarandon's mug on the screen, and I admit, it marks me as shallow. As perhaps, dare I say it, vacuous. But the minute I saw Susan Sarandon's mug on the screen, it was like, it wasn't just oh no or no, it was oh hell no. I am for sure not gonna watch that movie. Which might otherwise be a good movie. Because the thought of personally, and this is entirely arbitrary and capricious on my part, because I'm sure that I indirectly help put money in right-wing pockets on an almost daily basis. But regardless, nope. The idea of in any wise contributing to the financial well-being of Susan fucking Sarandon is nauseating to me. So no Blue Beetle for me. Oh, while we're being vacuous, just in case you were wondering, we talked a little bit last night about the white lash against the Barbie movie. Well, little Benny, my dry wife Shapiro, I found out later, not only complained about the film, which I still suggest is a really fun movie, but he actually ranted about it for 43 continuous minutes. "I really hate that. I really hate the Barbie movie. The Barbie movie is too woke," etc., etc. For 43 minutes, who can listen to that or watch it? And, of course, to top it all off, there was a video of him with his little pedo beard literally setting fire to three Barbie dolls in what appeared to be the old school Weber kettle grill. I wish I was kidding. But I'm not. My first thought on seeing the video was, gee, I wish somebody from the EPA or whatever they call that. I actually think little Benny Drywife Shapiro is in Tennessee now, because that's where Matt Dysphoria Beard Walsh's outfit is headquartered. That's why Tennistan went so apeshit. And fortunately, that awful law got enjoined so that I could safely help my kids get moved. If that injunction gets removed or overturned, I won't be able to go back. But it would have been nice if some environmental official would have been standing there saying, Benny, it's illegal to do what you're doing. But by all means, stand downwind of the fumes, please, and breathe deep. Because I'm pretty sure that those burning plastic fumes are toxic, to say the very least. I think that's our third use of the word toxic during the first hour of this program. Teaching Black History. Bernadette says, every night the godforsaken old-ass party comes up with something to put up their sleeves only to pull out the next day to trigger or gaslight us. I'm exhausted of it all. As a person of color, a black woman in America, I choose to no longer allow them to trigger or gaslight me. My family's history has already been wiped out by this criminal enterprise called the United States of America. I cannot change the past, but I'm going to make damn sure my grandson knows the country where he was born has the dirty history it has. Not so he grows to hate his country, but so he grows to change his country, to improve his country. The future belongs to him, Bernadette notes. I'm going to continue to use my voice and what little money I've got to fight for our republic, fight for all our rights, support those whose message supports our democracy and the rule of law, and teach my grandson the true history of this country. I will also continue to support President Biden in his effort to hold this republic together in the face of fascism. And Robin, you know what I I believe in what you do. As soon as I can, I'll send more help. Thank you, Bernadette. Don't worry about it. Do not worry about it. We love you. And you're doing such good by your young scholar of a grandson. And he is so lucky to have you as his grandmother and his biggest booster. Expunging Impeachment Lee in New York says, do they need a whiteout or white supremacy takes things out? Ah, Lee. First cowbell of the evening goes to Lee. Whiteout. What's a good age to learn? Clarence says, I'm wondering how old were these right-wing commentators and politicians when they first heard anything about the subjects of slavery, history, different genders, science. The outrage seems to be bullshit to me. Protecting children from grooming is a crock of shit. They know children learning subjects at an early age doesn't mean the student will be traumatized. Youth today are exposed to all types of experiences. Nothing is more horrific than gun violence. Life is a learning experience with positive and negative outcomes. MAGA folks need to get their shit together. Well, need to and will are certainly two entirely separate things, Clarence. For the good of the country, they do. They need to get their shit together. But for their own comfort, they will not. Oh, and if you're listening to the podcast, please like and subscribe and leave a comment. If you'd be so kind, share the link to the podcast so other people can become parts of the community. I really appreciate it. And so do the other people who have made this little community a part of their day, their family. Thank you. I say at the end of every program lately, wear your mask when you're around the maggots because they don't give a damn about anybody but themselves and they're perfectly willing to die for their stupid orange God Emperor Mango Mussolini. That again is how fascism works. You will die for the dear leader. as to learning with some of these right-wing assholes, Clarence, the question you asked, they may not have learned to this day. They are controlled entirely by their amygdala, their lizard brain. And it's just a matter of barking and grunting, but it's the hominins dancing around the obelisk, waving the bloody bone in 2001.
Critical race theory. Gender ideology.
They live on nothing but what Roger Waters referred to as that warm thrill of confusion, that space cadet glow. Steve, with the language, my friends, I think another translation could be, my friends, they can't help it. Or, my friends, God love them. Sure. Susan Sarandon, Steve notes, is a helper. She helped the reversal of Roe. She's helping to reverse Obergefell. She's helping to reverse Loving. She's helping to reverse Griswold, the future, the reversal of the reversal of Lochner. Funny, I don't feel so helped. Well, she's fabulously wealthy, and so she knows that she can take these toxic sparkle fart-propelled unicorn cavalry purity patrol positions because nothing's ever going to touch her. And how nice for her, huh? And John of Central PA said, I do forget that Biden is a politician and that language is part of his wheelhouse. I will say this, he's doing a good job otherwise. No doubt about that. Seriously, there are sparkle farters who are praising him. I read that a minute ago. That's on me. Thank you, John. It's probably where I was reminded of the sparkle fart-propelled unicorn cavalry purity patrol. So we are at the top of the hour, and we are $1,989 in the hole, and trying desperately to catch up so that I can keep the phones on, the lights on, et cetera, et cetera. Any help is great help. Thanks in advance. Let's see. What other... let's continue with the vacuity. Leon Scum is apparently mad at the Barbie movie, too, because he's deeply insecure about his own gender. He scummed. See how it works? He put out a scum and said, if you take a shot every time Barbie says the word patriarchy, you will pass out before the movie ends. Goes to show how stupid Leon Scum is. You know who says patriarchy the first time? Hint. It's not Barbie. It's Ken. So, okay. Oh, Piers Morgan is mad about the movie, too. If I made a movie mocking women as useless dunderheads, constantly attacking the matriarchy, and depicting all things feminist as toxic bullshit, I wouldn't just be cancelled. I'd be executed. The movie achieves exactly what it wanted to achieve, and that is to establish the matriarchy as the perfect antidote to the patriarchy, when in fact it's just the same concept that they asked us all to detest in the first place.
Yo.
Piss Morgan. I guess he feels mocked as a useless dunderhead, and frankly, well, where Piss Morgan is concerned, his self-identification may be valid. We see you, Piss. You're valid. Ginger Gates, oh my God, she just keeps going. She said, Ryan Gosling's Ken is disappointingly low T and has beta energy. So now maggot women can spot which guys are suffering with low testosterone. I don't know if she noticed Ryan Gosling's six-pack abs or anything. And some pretty studly musculature, but he doesn't seem to be suffering from low T. And again, she's married to Matt, the Forehead Gates, who doesn't exactly come across as a manly man of masculine masculinity, now does he? And there is a moment when one of the characters from Human World looks at Barbie. Barbie says something relevant and smart, and the girl says, she's a girl, says something like, oh, well said, white savior Barbie. Fascists never seem to understand parody or satire. And it's almost, it's almost axiomatic. With that in mind, let's go to Tenistan, shall we? Do. So this story comes to us from Tullahoma, Tennessee. That's basically the whiskey area of Tennessee. Jack Daniels and George Dickel. Like. Well, a high school student in Tullahoma, Tennessee is suing his school district and the administrators, and the principal, in federal court in the Eastern District of Tennessee, Winchester Division. The student, identified with he, him pronouns, his, has the ACLU behind him, who will probably make some money out of this case, and that's how the ACLU continues to function. Let's see, the lawsuit names as defendants Tullahoma City Schools Principal Jason Quick and Vice Principal Derek Crutchfield, the administrators who were involved in suspending the little smartass. I mean, come on, we're talking about high school kids, we're talking about teenagers. Because these asshats suspended the kid for making satirical internet posts about his dweeby-ass principle. It started earlier this summer. Didn't happen in school or on school time. The kid is about to be a high school senior. The kid posted an image that had been made by another Instagram user to his own personal Instagram account. It showed Principal Quick, Piss Quick, holding a box of fruit and vegetables. It's worth noting that Quick had himself originally posted the photograph to his own account. And it's some peak teenage smartassery. Somebody added the word "my brother" to the photo of Principal Pissquick. And then somebody else added, "like a sister, but not a sister." According to the lawsuit papers, the post was meant to suggest a close friendship between the smart-ass student and Quick, and to provide a humorous contrast to Quick's overly serious demeanor towards the plaintiff and other students. Then there was another meme posted that showed Principal Pissquick as an anime cat. Nya-nya. And then there was a third post, August 2nd of 2022. Kid posted an image showing Quick's head superimposed on a hand-drawn cartoon meant to resemble a character from the online game Among Us. The image also shows a cartoon bird named Mordecai from the Cartoon Network series Regular Show, shown clinging to Quick's leg. Quick suspended the kid, and there's no law against being a smart-ass teenager in this country, at least not yet that I'm aware of. School policy says that a kid can be prohibited from posting images, whether at home or school, that result in the embarrassment, demeaning, or discrediting of any student or staff. The kid was also, wait for it, the kid was also charged with social media activity unbecoming of a wildcat. Well, the ACLU lawyer said the First Amendment bars public school employees from acting as a round-the-clock board of censors over student expression. The Supreme Court has been clear. Unless a student's off-campus expression causes substantial disruption at school, the job of policing their speech falls to parents, not the government. I guess the kid's already graduated, but the lawsuit continues. This all went back to 2022. August 10th, 2022, the kid was suspended after the third post. At that time, the kid was receiving treatment for clinical depression and anxiety. After Vice Principal Crutchfield informed IP, the plaintiff, about the suspension, IP became visibly upset and started panicking about how the suspension would affect his future and his standing at Tullahoma High School. IP experienced sweating, shortness of breath, and lost feeling in both arms. And Quick and Crutchfield, as the all-knowing, all-seeing administrators of Tullahoma High School, damned well should have known that the kid had an anxiety problem. Then Crutchfield backed down and said, "Oh, it's only going to be a 3-day suspension." Now, this kid's busting his ass. He's got a 3.4 GPA. He plays trombone in the band. The senior leader of his Boy Scout troop. But these petty little martinets don't give a shit. In the lawsuit, the kid seeks a jury trial and wants the social media policy enjoined and banned as violations of both the First and the 14th Amendments. But so it ever is with fascists. Yeah, Micah says, yeah, sure they do. They just don't like it when it's directed at them, which is often. Yeah, sure they understand satire. They just don't like it when they're the targets of it. Oh, back to Benny, my dry wife Shapiro, regarding the 43-minute rant. Brother Deacon Asa says, oh, come on, give the kid a break. For a 12-year-old to do anything continuously for 43 minutes is an achievement in itself. You're Hitler. You're Hitler. That's a new one, I think. Hey, thank you to John in Central PA for getting us started. We are now down to $1,979. And we're digging our way out of the hole. Ralph said, Lassie, get the sheriff. And about 1,979 feet of rope. Cynthia in the Bay Area, subject line, the Barbie movie. Hey, Robin. Hey, Cynthia. Gosh, after the endorsements for the Barbie movie from those brain-dead idiots, I'm going to have to go out of my way to see it, and I'm sure I'll be cheering it and having a jolly good time. P.S. Smiley face. Cynthia. P.S. Take that, all you rat-fucking maggots. Got to wear your pink, Cynthia. Just don't be out of place. Got to wear your pink. Of course, you live out in a kind of place where maybe they'll have the big Barbie box you can have your picture taken in. That would be fun. Yeah, I honestly, like I said, I didn't have any real interest in going to see it. And it was a happy accident. Tracy said last night that I was the better for it because she's still disappointed in Indiana Jones and the Grandfather Clock of Calamity or whatever it is. But I still love the music. I mean, who doesn't? Okay, Emilio, I will. Stop being such a total Hitler, Robin. And Brendan. Subject line 2001. Hi, Robin. Hi, Brendan. Funny coincidence, your mention of the hominids dancing around the monolith in the book 2001, Arthur C. Clarke describes sounds they are making as, oh no, I didn't know this. Yay, I've officially learned a new thing today. In the book 2001, Arthur C. Clarke describes the sounds the hominins are making while dancing around the monolith as, wait for it, twittering. That's beautiful. I love that. Brendan, thank you, thank you, thank you. Twittering. Somebody tell Leon Scum. Subject line, Benny, my dry wife, Shapiro, Greg Gutfeld, and Mr. I've got some roofies in my pocket, Jesse Waters. I got some roofies in my pocket. I don't know why that's... As an initial matter, Steve says, the Jesse Waters comment comes from Ronnie Cheng. There was a time when I would just ignore those clowns. The last 3 years of the U.S. Supreme Court tell me just how fucking wrong I was. To be clear, what Bernadette wrote was the dictionary definition of patriotism. One loves one's country when one acknowledges, as Bernadette does, the sins of one's country's past. One allows those sores to fester and hurt with the view to acknowledging those sins and letting those sins disgust you and make you sick and then say, I won't accept that. I'm going to expend every drop of blood, every bead of sweat, and every ounce of energy to teach the truth to posterity and make sure we change the arc of our nation's history. I see Bernadette as a patriot who loves her country so much to be pissed the fuck off at it to make sure it moves away from and atones for its past sins. Yeah, it's the way it's supposed to work. And thank you to Uncle Smokey. Thank you so much. We are now down to $1,974 as we attempt to climb slowly but surely out of this very deep, dark, and cavernous hole. And it's kind of squishy down here, and my ankles are turning blue. Thank you so much. Okay, more stupidity. There's a good think piece, since we've been talking about this. There's a really good think piece by Joan Walsh at The Nation. Behind the Right's Frenzied Defense of Florida's Slavery Curriculum. It's worth the read. Joan Walsh says, what's telling is how hard the right is fighting back against critics attacking the outrageous personal benefit claim, you know, slaves develop skills which in some instances could be applied for their personal benefit. In some instances, Governor Ron DeSantis, who likes to brag about his Stop Woke Education bill, seemed at first to distance himself because his presidential bid is circling the drain, at least partly because voters are repelled by his culture war histrionics. And by the way, Monkey Up got punked recently. He was at a Clavering rally he was hosting in South Carolina stand when protesters showed up with rainbow flags and accused the little shit weasel of having a demonstrably true anti-LGBTQ agenda. Happened in Tega K, South Carolina. Some people had slipped in and sat behind him. You know, those are the cherished, valued seats. And three people seated behind Monkey Up took off their shirts to display white T-shirts decorated with rainbow flags and unfurled pride flags behind Monkey Up. And eventually, though, he decided to turn and scream at the LGBTQ advocates, yelling, and children shouldn't be worried about our children. Parents shouldn't be worried about our children either. We don't want you indoctrinating our children. Leave our kids alone. Because he, too, is a petty, pissy little martinet. And so, as Joan Walsh notes, his campaign is, in fact, circling the drain. He literally snorted, she writes, when asked about Vice President Kamala Harris's claim that the Florida guidelines want to replace history with lies. But that's when he said,
well, I wasn't involved.
And instead blamed his hand-picked, all-white Florida Board of Education.
He said, they're probably going to show that some of the folks that eventually parlayed, you know, being a blacksmith into doing things later in life, but the reality is all that's rooted in whatever is factual.
Because she is a masterful practitioner of the art of word knowing, Joan Walsh said, parlayed is a particularly cruel word. The enslaved didn't have the power to parlay any skills they may have acquired into opportunity. They were property, not entrepreneurs. The Washington Post's Eugene Robinson refuted DeSantis's claim with his own enslaved great-great-grandfather's history. He did, in fact, work as a blacksmith. But he had no ability to parlay anything because his time and labor were not his own, Eugene Robinson wrote. They belonged to his enslaver. He belonged to his enslaver. He was sold like a piece of livestock. At least twice. Yeah, I mentioned Jack Daniels the other a few minutes ago in the other story about the little smart-ass teenager in Tullahoma, Tennessee. Jack Daniels is Lynchburg, Tennessee. Tullahoma is George Stickel. But the fact of the matter is, and I guess this is woke, the white guy named Jack Daniel did not know shit about making whiskey. A black man did. And it was a black man who came up with the mash recipe, the so-called mash bill, for Jack Daniel, Tennessee whiskey. Came up with that whole charcoal filtering dodge. And Jack Daniel just let the mail the money roll in. So there's that. Joan Walsh notes that the Tampa Bay Times found that of the 16 examples the state produced of formerly enslaved people parlaying their master-taught skills into jobs later in life, few actually fit the description. They were either already free black people, or they learned skills after escaping slavery, or they never were slaves at all. My favorite, Joan Walsh says, they include Betty Washington Lewis, who was never a slave, but in fact President George Washington's younger sister, who herself owned slaves. Another prominent example, educator Booker T. Washington, but Washington became free as a child and worked numerous jobs to put himself through school. Born just down the mountain from me. There was a bust they put up in Malden, West Virginia, of Booker T. Washington, but they had to remove it to the state capitol because, well, people kept spray painting it with that word that has all the same letters as ginger. Oh, and by the way, the Tampa Bay Times pointed out that the leader of the group that wrote the guidelines is actually the head of the National Black Republican Association. Oh, self-hater. Wow. And so, as she notes, the right wing is entirely in a mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing frenzy, furiously picking their teeth with their toenail clippings because Kamala Harris dared set foot in Florida and spoke truth to power. Some clown by the name of Charles C.W. Cook penned something titled "Kamala Harris is Brazenly Lying About Florida's Slavery Curriculum." Unironically, Charles C.W. Cook wrote it for the National Review because he's a writer for the National Review. And for those who don't know, the National Review is the original home office of the Republican back white lash against desegregation and voting rights and civil rights in the 1960s. It's just history. It's woke! Kamala Harris is brazenly lying about Florida's slavery curriculum. Joan Walsh brings out her word-knowing bona fides again. Says, brazen's a particularly gendered term of insult, going back to Jezebel, but I doubt Cook would care. He's made a niche for himself mocking Harris for her vapidity and her voice, but she really enraged him with her attack on Florida's slavery curriculum as a form of gaslighting. This is a brazen lie, Cook huffed. It's an astonishing lie. It's an evil lie. It is so untrue, so deliberately and cynically misleading, that in a sensible political culture, well, she's a hysterical woman, Cook, right? Harris would be obligated to issue an apology. And he was particularly filled with angst because somewhere in that curriculum it does discuss a little bit of the violence and cruelty of enslavement. Nonetheless, Cook does say that the personal benefits claim is correct. And as I mentioned, yes, Jesse Waters said in that same segment that we had the quote from Greg Gutfeld, "This is historical fact that slaves did develop skills while they were enslaved and then used those skills as blacksmiths in agriculture, tailoring, in the shipping business to benefit themselves and their families." He left out Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben. And she draws a line between dots back to 1837, when South Carolina Senator John C. Calhoun, having been formerly vice president under the genocidal maniac Andrew Jackson, and Andrew Jackson threatened to hang John C. Calhoun, higher than Haman, I think he said. John C. Calhoun in 1837 gave his infamous "Slavery a Positive Good" speech, in which he said, "Never before has the black race of Central Africa, from the dawn of history to the present day, attained a condition so civilized and so improved, not only physically, but morally and intellectually." He was the devil, Calhoun. So, like I said, this goes on for a bit. And it's worth the read. Weirdly, the poll question at the end of this story finds 86% of respondents saying that the criticism of the Florida slavery curriculum is totally warranted. It may depend on the outlet itself. Let's see. Oh, Brendan, with a correction. I have to correct my previous email, but the Arthur C. Clarke Twittering remark is from his book about working on the script for 2001 with Stanley Kubrick and not the 2001 book itself. Sorry, but I'm stove up in bed and it's hard to type with an O2 mask on. Also forgot it's Peace Lady. So, Peace Lady, Brendan. Brendan, I'm sorry you're all stoved up. Do get better quickly. Peace, Brendan. And Cynthia adds, as long as we're out there indoctrinating children, I think I'll start indoctrinating all those brown-eyed kids to have blue eyes like me. That ought to really get the stupid maggots going. Cynthia's point being that there's no such... it is impossible to indoctrinate into being something that they simply are. Good luck. Do that, Cynthia. No, you're really blue-eyed. You can just identify as blue-eyed. You know, I wouldn't even whisper that into the ear of the universe, Cynthia, because the goddess of irony may hear it. And then where will we be? Stephen, New York, my cogent and detailed analysis of why DeSantis is circling the drain. Yeah, here it comes. Wait for it. I defer to Professor Spicoli's cogent and detailed analysis regarding Monkey Up.
You dick!
I think that was a good call on your part, Steve. So it is Tuesday. Oh, Lee wants a cowbell for John Williams for all the wonderful music. Obligatory Lost in Space reference. The TV show's theme show was by Johnny Williams. Oh, by the way, I can't wait to watch... last night we started catching up. We were down two episodes because of the drop of the sudden unannounced drop of an episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. So we watched the episode with Uhura and her unlikely friendship with a young Jim Kirk. I love the way the writers on this show are playing with canon or adhering to it, because of course in the original series, those old scientists, I just love that. In the original series, aliens compel Kirk and Uhura to kiss Shatner and Nichelle Nichols. And it caused tremendous Sturm und Drang. It was the first time a black person and a white person had kissed on TV that I'm aware of. But even then, it could only be allowed because it was compelled behavior and not behavior by choice. And this is curiously long about the same time that the Supreme Court is deciding Loving versus Virginia on substantive due process grounds and equal protection grounds. Loving versus Virginia being the one substantive due process case that Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas, the most crooked man in the modern history, at least, of the Supreme Court, so crooked that when he dies he will have to be screwed into the dirt with an auger. That's the one case Fappy didn't mention when he was talking about all the other cases that are based upon substantive due process. This was in his concurrence to Dobbs, remember? You know, Obergefell, Lawrence, Bostock, Griswold, etc. Loving is the one case he did not mention wanting to have overturned because, of course, even he, Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas, realized what a howling hypocrite that would make him obviously to be, being as how he's married to his white wife, Ginsurrectionist Thomas. Hmm. Lee in New York says, please be generous with cowbells. Life is too short to be lacking them. I entirely agree, Lee. So, this is Conversation Radio. You are welcome to converse. New callers are always, always, always welcome. The stress line number is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And you can reach me on Skype. Just send a contact request or look up Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And that'll get you right into the action. In the meantime, however, it is a Tuesday, this 25th day of July. It's a Tuesday, and that means we have the Green News Report, courtesy of our dear friends Brad and Desi. Let's see what they've got on their threat board, shall we?
It's Tuesday, July 25, 2023.
I don't know that we can actually talk about normals, because it will keep changing. It will just keep getting warmer.
Summer 2023 is breaking records for record breaking.
The oceans are also suffering heat waves. Actually, the oceans are running a fever.
Ocean heat wave damaging Florida's fragile coral reefs, plus...
people don't want this.
Biden administration unveils new efficiency rules for water heaters. Republicans freak out.
All of those Republican freakouts and hopefully more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
They're trying to change the standards on this in order to have people buy more efficient appliances.
Wow, that sounds terrible. More efficient appliances? You can pry my inefficient, expensive old water heater from my slightly warm, dead hands. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, is there anything these Republicans will not freak out about when the administration comes up with kind suggestions to help them save money and stay safer?
Of course not.
Oh, brother, what do you got for us today?
Well, first, the record heat waves striking across the northern hemisphere are not letting up. In Greece, the extreme heat and dryness has turned vegetation into a tinderbox. Officials have mounted that nation's largest ever evacuation at the height of tourism season on the islands of Rhodes and Corfu due to more than 100 raging infernos. The heat energy has also generated bizarre storms in Europe, like the extreme rain and hail storm in the Italian town of Seregno over the weekend that turned the flooded streets into literal ice floes in the middle of July. Canada is still grappling with its worst wildfire season on record, with more than 27 million acres burned. Europe's climate service estimates that carbon emissions from Canada's fires this year are on track to be more than double Canada's previous wildfire emissions record year in 2014.
Oh, Canada.
But in Nova Scotia,
we got 3 months worth of rain in less than 24 hours. It came fast and it came furious.
Quote, unimaginable damage from a deadly storm system that dumped 10 inches of rain in less than 24 hours, causing that province's worst flooding in 50 years.
Wow.
In the U.S., forecasters say the weeks-long blistering heat wave in the Southwest is expanding its misery to most of the country. As we go to air, Phoenix is on a record streak of 25 consecutive days of temperatures above 110 degrees, breaking its previous record of 18 days with no signs of stopping yet.
Ouch.
Arizona hospitals are seeing a spike in the number and severity of patients with significant severe burns from falling onto hot pavement. Officials say the excessive heat has killed at least 4 people in national parks across the Southwest. Off the coast of Florida, a marine heat wave with sustained water temperatures hovering around 95 degrees is impacting the state's coral reefs. Scientists with the Coral Restoration Foundation reported widespread signs of coral bleaching. At least one coral reef restoration site recorded 100% coral mortality.
How's that restoration going?
The surge in extreme weather is also a wake-up call for agriculture. A new study warns that the world needs to prepare for more frequent frequent crop failures. The researchers say because the climate crisis is changing weather patterns and slowing down the jet stream, that in turn is increasing the risk of simultaneous crop failures in multiple agricultural regions around the world.
And yet, with all of this news, you would be stunned at how many people I'm hearing from on Twitter with the hashtag climate scam. It's just summer.
With the prolonged extreme heat waves across the global north, NASA predicts July 2023 will likely rank as the planet's hottest month ever recorded since record keeping began in the 1850s. And they say 2023 and 2024 are likely to rank as the hottest years ever recorded.
Hashtag climate scam.
According to NOAA, in the past month, nearly 5,000 U.S. heat and rainfall records were broken or tied, and more than 10,000 new heat records were set globally. In a press conference, NASA scientist Gavin Schmidt said these new records are the long-predicted consequences of human-caused global warming.
That is going to continue. And the reason why we think that's going to continue is because we continue to put greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. And until we stop doing that, temperatures will keep on rising.
Finally, the Biden administration on Monday proposed new standards for outdated home water heaters, making them cheaper and more efficient, estimating the new rules will save Americans money on energy and water bills, collectively saving Americans more than $11 billion every year. Congressional Republicans are outraged that Biden is forcing American families to pay less for energy and water and breathe cleaner air in their own homes while removing a chunk of the nation's greenhouse gas emissions.
You know, if we could just power the earth on Republican outrage, we could end this global warming problem tomorrow. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Angry, please don't be angry, 'cause I was only teasing.
Alrighty then. Climate scam. Really? They're gonna be screwed. It's all, don't look up. Don't look at the comet barreling down on planet Earth and you won't have to worry about it. And what they said is true. If we could power the Earth on Republican outrage, nobody would ever have another power bill. But I wanted to wait and see what all they mentioned, because I saw a sobering climate story earlier today. You know, the kind that gives you the fan tods. There's a couple of them. There's a new paper out. It has to do with the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, the AMOC. This is a system of ocean currents in the Atlantic. They transport warm water from the tropics into the North Atlantic. It allows a livable climate in places like Northern Europe. Because remember, and I think this is just one of those cognitive things that we do. We tend to think of the continents as being, you know, roughly on a parallel. But they're not. Berlin is at roughly the same latitudes as Alaska. And when ships like the Mayflower sailed from England, they sailed south and west. Not just west, south and west. And when you fly from places like Boston or New York to England or France, it often takes a route that goes north and east and can even go up over Canada and cross the... Oh, just, you know, what am I talking about? But if that current, according to this new study, if that current collapses, and that collapse could come as early as this decade, anytime from 2025 onward, according to the report, shit hits the fan. And yes, all of this heat is related to climate change. It's kind of weird for me because, well, here in Appalachia, while the rest of the country's been baking, it's been kind of not bad. This is our first real dose this week. We're going to touch the 90s. Right now, even as I speak here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, it's 87 degrees and decidedly uncomfortable. The little air conditioner is doing all it can, but it can't keep up. But we're going to, and it's wild. It's one of those moments when you look up and go, I may complain from time to time, but I'm glad I'm in Appalachia. Really glad. So back to the AMOC. Here's what's going to happen. And it boggles my mind. And again, this was a real live, peer-reviewed, scientific study in the journal Nature. Warning of a forthcoming collapse of the Atlantic meridional overturning circulation. It's described as a major tipping element in the climate system, and a future collapse would have severe impacts on the climate in the North Atlantic region. In recent years, weakening circulation has been reported, but assessments by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change based on the Climate Model Intercomparison Project model simulation suggest that a full collapse is unlikely within the 21st century. I'll take a moment and note that babies are being born now who will very likely see the dawning of the 22nd century. The little grandbaby that we're waiting on, who we expect in the first week of November. Well, she would be 77 years old in November of the year 2100. Interesting to think about things like that. Well, it turns out that tipping to an undesired state in the climate is, however, a growing concern with increasing greenhouse gas concentrations. Predictions based on observations rely on detecting early warning signals, primarily an increase in variance, loss of resilience, and increased autocorrelation, critical slowing down, which have recently been reported for the AMOC. Here, we provide statistical significance and data-driven estimators for the time of tipping. We estimate a collapse of the AMOC to occur around mid-century under the current scenario of future emissions. The authors note that the AMOC is one of the most important tipping elements in Earth's climate system. In recent years, model studies and paleoclimatic reconstructions indicate that the strongest abrupt climate fluctuations, the Dansgaard-Oeschger events, are connected to the bimodal nature of the AMOC. Lots of sciencey words in here. Numerous climate model studies show a hysteresis behavior where changing a control parameter, typically the freshwater input into the northern Atlantic, makes the AMOC bifurcate through a set of codimension one saddle node bifurcations. Holy crap, I didn't know I was going to need a dictionary for this. State-of-the-art Earth system models can reproduce such a scenario, but the intermodal spread is large and the critical threshold is poorly constrained. Well, here's the translation. And by the way, I did a podcast with our dear friend Dan Fisher. It's called Let's Talk 10. And he and his guest, in every episode, make a list of 10 things. And then they compare their top 10 list, neither one nor the other knowing in advance. Dan invited me to participate, and our Let's Talk 10 is on songs that feature historical figures. And I had a blast, and that podcast dropped yesterday. It's easy to find. In fact, there's a link to it on my Facebook page. If you've ever heard any of the conversations Dan and I have had together, you know that we get going and we can go for hours. And we have here. And Dan managed to edit our conversations down to 45 minutes, which must have been a hellish undertaking. But I listened to it on the way back from Tennistan yesterday and it was just a joyful little listen. And I mention all of this because, spoiler, one of the songs that Dan mentions is by The Clash. And then when I read this article about the collapse of the AMOC, I thought of a song by The Clash because of this paragraph. Such a collapse could trigger rapid weather and climate changes in the U.S., Europe, and elsewhere. If it were to happen, it could bring about an ice age in Europe and sea level rise in cities such as Boston and New York, as well as more potent storms and hurricanes along the East Coast. We certainly seem to be headed in that direction. What Clash song, Robin? An ice age is coming. The sun's zooming in. Meltdown expected. The wheat is growing thin. Nuclear terror, but I have no fear. 'Cause London is drowning. And I live by the river. London Calling, remember? I mean, some of you. I do. So lo and behold, and one of the chief criticisms of, by the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing white wingers who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings,
yeah, those stupid scientists. Those damn stupid scientists, they done said, that back in the 70s, they were saying we was going to have a new ice age. And now the planet's too hot. They don't even know what they're talking about. I got common sense. I ain't got that book sense. I got common sense. Yeah. Common sense.
Well, it turns out that global warming can lead to climate change. And that climate change can, in fact, lead to currents collapsing. And current collapses can lead to, well, here we go again, ice ages. The fans of the original Game of Thrones series are probably sitting around muttering, winter's coming. But in addition to the ice ages, and you know, the fun part of the ice age won't even, we won't have any woolly mammoths or anything to hunt. It also could lead to drastically reduced amounts of rain and snowfall across the central and western U.S., the study's authors say. Oh, great. The authors write, we estimate a collapse of the AMOC to occur around mid-century under the current scenario of future emissions. And the faster the AMOC moves, the more warm water gets turned over from warm to cool depths. And Europe is several degrees warmer than it otherwise would be. And so with data from 2018 and 2021, the scientists now say, yeah, that's not going to be a 21st century thing. That's or a 22nd century thing. That's a 21st century thing. We have ocean temperature data from the last 150 years. And the scientists estimate with 95% certainty that the AMOC will stop. Just stop. Between 2025 and 2095. Our result, the authors say, underscores the importance of reducing global greenhouse gas emissions as soon as possible. One of the authors, Peter Ditlevsen from the University of Copenhagen. Is kind of, well, the report's kind of shouting from the rooftops as to the extent that scientists shout from rooftops. Oh, okay. Lee earlier said, be generous with the cowbells, and I shall. That's for Ken in Northwest PA, translating the climate report about the AMOC. Message body. We're all screwed, Robin. That cowbell is deserved. Interviewed by USA Today, Peter and Suzanne Ditlevsen explained greenhouse gas emissions cause global warming, which speeds up the melting of Greenland ice. The melted freshwater entering the North Atlantic can then disrupt the AMOC, potentially causing major climate disruptions. When the increased meltwater from Greenland enters the North Atlantic, it's freshwater, which is lighter than the salty seawater around it. This excess freshwater can disrupt the normal sinking of the salty water, weakening or even shutting down the AMOC. If the AMOC collapses, it can have far-reaching effects on weather patterns and ocean currents, leading to significant climate changes. Wow, I'm sure Leon Scum is right at work on that. Who am I kidding? And the problem with these reports, and it's not a problem with the reports, don't get me wrong. It is a problem with human beings. We have a sort of learned helplessness.
Well, we can't do nothing about it, so I guess it's just going to quit raining in Kansas. Boston's going to flood. New York's going to flood. Wilmington, North Carolina's going to flood. It'll probably flood up the Chesapeake Bay and Delaware River. Washington will flood, and Philly will flood, and Miami will flood.
And this sort of highlights the irresponsibility of a man like Ron Monkey up to Clantis. to deny the existence of anthropogenic climate change caused by human activity, is to actively doom, by disdain and negligence and willful, gross, wanton conduct, millions upon millions of human beings. But they're pro-life. You know, as long as it's still, the life is still inside a woman's body. After that, fuck them. Let them drown. And I may be wrong because I'm not an evolutionary biologist. But we can't evolve as a species, as a population. Populations evolve, individuals do not. We cannot evolve fast enough as a species to keep up with the world that is coming toward us. The naysayers were, of course, there, and USA Today, being USA Today, went out and found them. They found Michael Mann at the University of Pennsylvania, who said, "I'm not sure the authors bring much to the table other than a fancy statistical method. History is littered with flawed predictions based on fancy statistical methods. Sometimes they're too fancy for their own good." Yeah, fancy. Then there's Stefan Rahmstorf, a climate scientist at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research in Germany, who said, "A single study provides limited evidence, but when multiple approaches lead to similar conclusions, this must be taken very seriously, especially when we're talking about a risk that we really want to rule out with 99.9% certainty. The scientific evidence now is that we can't even rule out crossing a tipping point already in the next decade or two. There's still large uncertainty where the tipping point of the AMOC is, but the new study adds to the evidence that it is much closer than we thought just a few years ago. And what is more important, I think, is the fact that there is a tipping point. And as we continue and continue and continue and continue to burn fossil fuels more and more and more, the tipping points cannot help but draw closer and closer and closer and closer. Meanwhile, here in West Virginia, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice and Baby Dog. Well, they, you know, he said, "In no way, shape, form, or fashion do I want to hurt the coal industry. I mean, the coal industry made me who I am." Actually, your daddy did and handed you all the money at the end of his life. But it was coal money. But a big chunk of Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice's billions is in agriculture. Specifically, corn. In fact, back when he was first running for governor, a lot of West Virginians looked the other way and said, "Well, that's all right," because when he was giving his really should be a lot more infamous than it is, Kunta Kinte speech, "I asked God, why did you make me Jim Justice and not Kunta Kinte? And God said, Jim Justice, I made you Jim Justice and not Kunta Kinte because I had big plans for you. I wanted you to be somebody." And when the few people did push back and say, "Oh, Jim, that's pretty racist," he said, "I am not a racist. I have lots of African-American workers, and I let them operate some of my most expensive farming equipment." I guess they're obtaining skills that they can parlay. See how I tie things in pretty little bows? But that farming, those farming holdings are going to have a hard time His actual interests are in conflict with each other. But nonetheless, he did sign a bill that the maggot legislature here insisted upon. It's a bill that requires governmental permission for any public utility that wants to switch over to renewable energy sources like wind and solar, and who would like to stop having to burn coal. Because I gotta wonder, do the executives of the coal industry ever for one moment think about what they're doing, not just to the planet, not just to the ability of the planet to support human life, not just to the human lives who live on this planet, but to their own family, their own friends, because they're not going to be able to live in Logan's Run bubble cities. You know, I see stories about how eventually, due to climate change, Washington, D.C. will be underwater. And I think of that scene in Logan's Run where Logan and his ingenue co-star find the ruins of Washington, D.C. and find Peter Ustinov living with a bunch of cats in the ruins of the United States Capitol. And sometimes in the times that I've been in D.C., I cannot help but look around, having once as a teenager seen the ruins of ancient Rome, and wonder what in 2,000 years will be left of Washington, D.C. The Capitol Dome will for sure be gone. Imagine the White House as nothing but the columns across the front. Imagine the Lincoln Memorial as nothing but a pile of rubble with a broken stone statue of a man no one even knows who he was, seated on a throne like Olympian Zeus. Well, this report suggests that that is what is coming. And the condemned will eat heartily. Oh, the journal was Nature Communications, and it is a British journal, by the way. Bit of a follow-up, totally separate topic. Oh, wait, let me go back to Bernadette. Bernadette says, hashtag climate scam. This might not be suitable for radio, but information is important. I'm sure you're fully capable of wordsmithing it. The following article and embedded YouTube video are frightening. See where the planet's carbon dioxide comes from an incredible NASA visualization. Let's see what we get. Yep, all the carbon dioxide is coming from mainland Asia, mostly Western Europe, Indian subcontinental Asia, and of course, North America. The work was based on data from NASA's Orbiting Carbon Observatory 2, the most complete data set of the concentration of atmospheric carbon dioxide across the planet. The views are obviously grim, particularly the emissions from highly industrialized regions and large cities where cars are the main form of transport. In parts of the world with low population density, such as Australia and Africa, the globe stays pretty clear for months, but the emissions eventually spread. The global south is largely not responsible for the carbon dioxide generation. Yeah, that's the music of the video playing in the background. The natural world is trying to keep up with us, but carbon sinks in the ocean and land can only take in about half of all the carbon dioxide we produce annually. The rest gets spread around the planet, which by December 2021 looks like a smoky orange bauble. You're right, Bernadette. It is, in fact, terrifying. And the people who have the power to stop it really don't much have much in the way of a will to do so. Because the people who are profiting by it are blinded by their avarice. And as such, have their morality and their ethics muted in search of holy profit. P-R-O-F-I-T, profit. Well, thank you, Billable Rick. Give yourself a cowbell for Jim Justice's employees. They're obtaining skills that they can parlay. I will. Thank you for recognizing it. It drives me absolutely bananas that Jim Justice is one of the most popular governors in the United States. A do-nothing, aw shucks, cornpone billionaire with a foghorn leghorn shtick, who is making a career out of being a cheat and a fraud and hauling a poor little English bulldog around and using it as a prop. It's repugnant. But like I said, I like to work in cogent little chunks, as it were. Another study, and Brad and Desi in the Green News Report mentioned the summer heat wave. And it's not just a summer heat wave in North America, it's a summer heat wave in Europe as well. A group of European scientists released a study today, and they issue assessments of extreme weather events. World Weather Attribution, based in London and the Netherlands, found three separate heat waves in July across the Northern Hemisphere that were, in fact, made massively worse because of decades of fossil fuel emissions that by now have raised the average temperature on Earth by 2 degrees Fahrenheit since the late 19th century. Friedrich Otto, co-founder of World Weather Attribution and an author on the study, who is a senior lecturer and climate scientist at the Grantham Institute in London, said, "It's something we definitely will see more of in the future. We don't know what the new normal or the new extreme will be in the future because we don't know when we'll stop burning fossil fuels. I hate to be a cynic, but something tells me we will stop burning fossil fuels when we stop being the dominant species on this planet." These researchers ran a dozen climate models, and they compared it to computer projections of a similar world that doesn't have climate change-induced warming. And what they found that was without human-induced climate change, the extreme heat in China would have been about a 1 in 250-year event. And the heat waves in July in the U.S. and Mexico and southern Europe would have been all but impossible. And in the short term, some global temperature moderation from a three-year La Nina weather pattern in the Pacific Ocean have kept things from getting worse, but now the Pacific switching to El Nino with warm water coming to the eastern Pacific and hell on wheels for weather patterns around the world. And so last month, according to the global climate record kept and followed by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, last month was the hottest June in the 174-year record that they have. The first week of July, the hottest globally since record-keeping began in 1850. And the month will be the hottest ever.
It's just summer.
You know, isn't it funny? The maggots say, it's just summer. When at the same time it was Jim Pisquick Inhofe of Oklahoma who brought a snowball into the well of the House, Senate years back and said,
I got a snowball here. It's here's your global warming.
Stupid fuck did it in like February when there was snow on the ground in Washington, D.C. Gavin Schmidt, director of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration's Goddard Institute for Space Studies, said on a press call last week, we anticipate that July is likely to be the warmest absolute month on record, and that's going to be a record that effectively goes back many hundreds, if not thousands of years. We don't see this every year. Except the problem is, now we will. And so, as Brad and Desi noted, you've got people who are getting second and third degree burns from falling down. Asphalt pavements, parking lots, and the like are reaching temperatures upwards of 180 degrees. I was told recently that tourists down on the Redneck Riviera at my beloved Gulf Shores, that white sand, that baby powder soft domino sugar white sand, they're complaining that the sand is too hot for them to walk on barefoot without burning their little tourist feet. Imagine what it must be like on the black sand beaches of the South Pacific. Kind of makes me wonder what August will be like. Thank you to an anonymous friend. We are now down to $1,964 in our attempt to get caught up in July from the hole we were in June, from the hole we were in May. Thank you so much. $1,964. With about 35 minutes to go in the program. And about over $1,000 in bills to pay. Thank you. Thank you for helping. Okay, back to the tawdry business of American politics. Hunter Biden has very good lawyers. And so it was that his lawyer filed an ethics complaint in the House of Representatives against Marginal Trailer Queen for what the lawyer described as a new level of abhorrent behavior after her porn show in the hearing last week. Lawyer Abby Lowell told the Office of Congressional Ethics in a letter that the Georgia Republicans' unmoored verbal abuses and attacks on Biden represented numerous ethical violations. She displayed on printed posters sexually explicit and nude images of Mr. Biden. Then, toward the end of her questioning, Ms. Green held up the graphic poster board, spouting yet another of her untethered conspiracy theories, suggesting without any evidence that they showed Mr. Biden making pornography. I don't have a lot of hope for it, but keep hope alive. And this story's it's got a little bit of age on it. It's about a week old, but it's interesting nonetheless. Never cared much for Chris Christie. Oh, wait, what? Interesting. I was talking with Miss Terry about this very thing. Suman, writing from Arizona. Subject line, omelet. The kid cooked an omelet in the backyard today afternoon as a science experiment, not on a grill, but rather on a limestone tile. It took about 6 minutes to cook. While that was all well and good fun, I wonder someday if we will be cooked like that. But how did it taste? What were the ingredients? If you're going to bring up food porn, Suman, you got to come with a recipe or at least an idea. And there, I was reminded with all of this of the footage from newsreels from World War II that showed members of the, I think it was the British Army in the Africa campaign in North Africa, and they were frying eggs on the armor of their tanks. Now you can probably just leave the egg in the shell out in the sun and just, I don't know, air fry them. Thanks, Suman. Hottest on record. Someone said this summer will be the hottest in our lifetime, and it may be the coolest summer going forward. Yeah, George, that's no pun intended, chilling. This will be the cool summer by next year. The year after that, it'll be, 114 degrees wasn't so terrible. Temperatures in the Middle East are approaching unlivable to humans. But keep working on your dick rocket, Leon Scum. Yeah, back to Chris Christie. He showed up for an interview over on Newsmuck with Eric Bolling. And like I said, while I've never been a fan of Chris Christie, he's a petty, mean, nasty Republican. At this point in time, we're in that ugly little space of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. I fully expect Nitwit Nero to be the nominee of the Republican Party, assuming that no natural causes take him out of the race. But by the time he gets into the race, he needs to be wobbling and damaged. And Chris Christie is filling the role that Liz Cheney filled a year or so ago. The so-called loyal Republicans who are trying to save their, you know, it's not altruism. What Chris Christie and Liz Cheney did were not altruism. They're trying to save the political party that is their fucking bread and butter. They need an old-school Republican Party that loves them some fossil fuels, loves them some Wall Street, loves them some money, and is, of course, quietly racist, quietly transphobic, quietly homophobic, but doesn't say the quiet part out loud so that they can keep their hands in the till. And so in this interview with Eric Bolling, Chris Christie turned loose. Where'd it go? Let's try this again. All right.
You know, it's pretty clear, I think, the world realizes that. Let's focus in on the news of the day. Donald Trump alerted the world that he was likely going to be indicted, likely going to be arrested. He's a target of another investigation. And you tweeted, as a former prosecutor, I want to see any potential indictment before I talk about the case against Donald Trump. And here's the part I don't get here. That said, let me be clear, his conduct on January 6th proves he doesn't care about our country and Constitution. Gov, I mean, there's so much to unpack here. You don't like the
is there?
You want him indicted? Should he be indicted? No, it's not about, should he be out of the race? Go ahead.
He should be charged if, in fact, there's evidence that he's committed a crime that's provable beyond a reasonable doubt in front of a jury of his peers. Until then, he has a presumption of innocence. But in terms of what I said about January 6th, that is specifically about what I know, which is that he sat in the White House for hours while the attack was going on the Capitol and did absolutely nothing, despite the fact that many people, myself included, were personally asking him to put out a statement asking people not to be violent. Yet he sat there for hours and did nothing.
I remember that day distinctly. He did get to the camera eventually, maybe not as quickly as you had hoped. He did tweet saying, hey, we're the party of law and order. Let's be calm here. He also did offer various law enforcement agencies, which he was turned down, offered to Pelosi, who would have to have pulled the trigger on that, and she pushed away. How are you indicting Trump for things that would appear to the electorate that he wasn't part of that, whatever you call it, riot, protest?
Well, first of all, Eric, I can't indict him for anything. I'm not a prosecutor anymore. I did that for 7 years. But what I will say to you is this, that he did nothing. I hear what you just said. Those all came very, very late in the game after this thing was going on for hours. And it's not just me. It's people like Mark Meadows, his own chief of staff at the time, who has said that despite pleas from him, from folks like his daughter Ivanka Trump, his son-in-law Jared Kushner, and others, Kellyanne Conway, all asking him to act and act quickly. He did not do that. And
do you think these indictments today, the announcement, do you think they're legitimate or politically motivated?
Eric, I can't tell. There was no indictment today. There was the sending of a target letter. And unlike all the other candidates in this race on either side who want to immediately jump when they hear a target letter to either criticize the president based upon those things or defend him based on those things. Since I'm the only one in this race who has done this work, I can tell you, you don't know anything until you actually see the.
Oops.
indictment. So that's why I said what I said in the tweet that I sent out. Let's see the indictment first. Let's read it. See what evidence that the special counsel has, if in fact an indictment comes, and then give your opinion. I just think it's better to read something before you give the opinion.
Chris Christie, the man, the father, the human, the politician, the contributor to ABC. Chris Christie, do you think Donald Trump had an interest in inciting the overthrow of the American government that day?
But quite frankly, I don't think he cared one way or the other, Eric. I think what he wanted was to stay in office. And I don't think he cared one way or the other what was going to happen. In fact, if he really did care, he would have done what he said he was going to do. When he stood on the Ellipse, he said, let's march up to the Capitol together, and I'm going to go with you. He went nowhere near it, Eric. He didn't care what was going to happen up there. He sent people up there to put pressure, I believe, on Mike Pence and on members of Congress to stall the peaceful transition of power. Mm-hmm. And he said as much later on when he said that it's okay to suspend the Constitution. You can't take an oath, Eric, to say you're going to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution and then say it's okay to suspend it.
Why are you running? Governor, why are you running? You know, Donald Trump is, he's got like 53-56% if you believe the polls or any given poll. You're down in the single digits. I mean, what motivates Chris Christie to run for president? Is it to take out Donald Trump, or Chris Christie is sort of fulfilling some sort of, I don't know, emotional void that you're looking for? Why are you running?
All right. Well, Eric, are you a psychiatrist today? You know, if you're a psychiatrist, spend more time on the former president than you will on me. Let me remind you that at this time in 2015, Donald Trump was at 6% and Jeb Bush was at 24%. And so if you and I also remember the polls because I was deeply involved in the president's 2016 campaign, that all told us that Hillary Clinton was going to win that race going away up into including the exit polls that night. I'm running because I believe that the country needs a change, that Joe Biden is an awful president of the United States, should have never been there, and it's only because of Donald Trump's failings that he is there. And what we need to do is to move this country
Governor,
in a new direction.
Here's the question.
Stop looking backwards.
He said he's not going to debate on that August 23rd Fox debate. He says he doesn't need to. Why should he? He pointed out you're at 4, and he said, why should I let someone at 4, you know, ask me questions? Do you really want to debate Donald Trump? The guy is, RFK Jr. called him the best debater in the history of politics.
Rotted FK is an idiot.
He's the best debater in the history of politics. Then if he gets on the stage, he's about to be uncrowned as the best debater in politics. And by the way, if he is, Eric, then he should get on that stage. By the way, I'm at 10% in New Hampshire and in third place, where this first primary is going to occur in 2024. And we're going to go in there, and he should be on that stage because he owes it to the Republican Party voters to get on the stage, defend his record, and talk about his vision for the future.
Would you run? Would you be scared
to get on the stage?
Would you be scared to get on the stage, Eric? Would you be his vice president if he asked you?
No.
Fair enough. We'd have to. Leave
I spoke
it there.
To Mike Pence. The job doesn't. I spoke to Mike Pence. The job doesn't sound like it was too great.
Mike Pence. Speaking of Mike Pence, Mike who? I'm just kidding. I'm teasing. Governor Chris Christie, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Very unfair. Very unfair to a good conservative like Mike.
See, the tigers never change their stripes, and neither do skunks. Good Republican Mike Pence. Still out there licking the boots of Donald Trump, Mike Pence is, even though Donald Trump's supporters, at Donald Trump's insistence, wanted to kill him. That's how they are. Let's look around a little bit more. I love a sick burn, and Joy Behar over at The View is quite often good for some. she decided to go after Matt, it just gets worse, for the hissy he threw over, and I guess we're going to be talking about this for a little bit, sorry. The Barbie movie. So, today, with a little montage of right-wing butthurt, Joy Behar took off.
No. So, we're going to change now to this. So, even before it did
even
big
Whoopi's
business
embarrassed
at the box office this weekend, a wave of conservatives were bashing Barbie. Mm. Here are some of their complaints. Clip, please.
I quickly learned this isn't a kid's movie after all, because the left has given Barbie a complete feminist makeover.
They're trying to kiss up to the Chinese Communist Party because they want to make money selling the movie in China.
I find it upsetting when material is based on children's IP, marketed to little girls, actually ends up being angry feminist claptrap.
We can always spot the Mickey Mouse voice of little Ben Dry Wife Shapiro.
And promotes falsehood all at the same time.
Wow. Wow.
It's a movie. It's a movie about a doll. I thought y'all would be happy. She has no genitalia, so there's no sex involved. Ken has no genitalia, so he can't be. It's a doll movie. And you know who? The kids know it's colorful and it's Barbie. They haven't lived through what the adults have lived through. So when they're seeing this movie, that's not how they're looking at it. The kids are looking at it as a Barbie movie. You guys, I want you all to tell your daughters why you're not taking them to see the Barbie movie. I want you to explain to them what's wrong with Barbie. Now,
and
look,
their sons.
I love my Barbie.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
It's a doll movie, guys. I'm shocked that that's what's freaking you out these days.
Whoopi's wearing platform heels with Barbies in them. Transparent.
In the red states than the blue states. The blue states were going to see Oppenheimer. I agree with the red states here because I'd rather see Barbie than some movie about an atomic bomb going off. You know, that's a scarier movie. So maybe they felt like having a good time in the South. Good for them.
I also just aspire to have, like, the time and energy to get worked up over a doll movie. Like, it reminds me of the Bud Light, you know, scandal or whatever. Is there not something more important going on in the world to get super passionate about? But it is, to Joy's point, it kind of shows how the right-wing influencers are actually out of touch with actual Republicans. Yeah. Every girlfriend of mine, Republican and Democrat, lined up this weekend to see it. There were memes. People were dressing up to go see it. It's fun. Greta Gerwig's brilliant. But also, I'm so taken by some of these right-wing men who have all these thoughts on masculinity. Oh, yeah. Like, somehow the Barbie movie is going to make them feel emasculated. No, caring so much about it is honestly the most emasculating thing I could think about. Yeah.
By the way, that's Elisa Farah Griffin. She's a Republican. She worked in the Trump administration. And her nails are done up in Barbie pink. Her lipstick is Barbie pink. And she's right. Ted Cruz is not exactly a paragon of masculinity. The only thing we're lacking now is Josh Hall and ass saying something about it, because he's the masculine man of masculine masculinity, after all. He wrote a book about it. And then we all got to watch him running like it away from the maggots on January 6th. That's why he's Josh Hall and ass.
Wasn't that Ben Shapiro?
Yeah.
Because if you're sitting there and you flipped it on a head and it was...
Like he should be in the bar.
Well, if you flip it on his head and it's not women but men, which is the history of time and the patriarchy, yeah. You're right. It was inhumane. It was unequal. It was like, that was the point. It's satire and it's hyperbole. The point of getting that kind of message across is that scene where Ken sees, they say, I really need to feel some feminine energy. Let's go to the construction site. Like, the whole point was to make you pause and say, wow, this is like the opposite of what we live in. And Greta Gerwig, by the way, this was the largest opening ever for a female director. And it wasn't a super superhero movie. It was really about being a girl. Yeah. So, there's some history making things here. But I also love the performances. Like Margot Robbie, Issa Rae, Kate McKinnon. Like, there was just It was just fun, and I think this is being overthought because that's the world we've lived in for a long time.
I saw both movies, and I didn't grow up with Barbie.
I didn't either.
I didn't grow up playing with Barbie dolls.
Never had a Barbie.
I loved Oppenheimer. I guess I'm the curmudgeon always anyway. But it was such a wonderful movie with these incredible performances. I think it was a great weekend for Hollywood.
Yeah.
I think it was a great weekend for people to go to the movies. I mean, Oppenheimer for me, it became a history lesson. Robert Downey Jr. is not Iron Man. He is a fantastic actor. Yeah. I mean, I saw something in him I'd never seen. You had people like Emily Blunt in that movie. Matt Damon is incredible.
Oh, Cillian Murphy.
It's a movie. That's the thing. That's what we do.
But that was
we make movies.
Film.
We make movies about all kinds of stuff. We make movies about people who fly. We make movies about dolls that talk and walk. And they hit two things. They talk about the real world that everybody lives in, and they talk about Barbie world. Mm-hmm. And they're two different things, and it's meant to make you just think or pause. It's yep. not meant to do anything but give you a good time. You know, go see the movie.
You know, Whoopi, I was reading that... Matt Gaetz complained about it. He showed up in a pink suit.
I thought he dressed up in a pink
suit. But it's rated PG-13. Seems like his crowd.
Ow, I love it. I love it. It's rated PG-13. That's his crowd. But standing there at the premiere, he's wearing a shell pink sport coat. At least he wears a jacket. He's not like Jim Jacket Off Jordan. Y'all never catch Jim Jacket Off Jordan jacketing off a pink jacket. And his wife Ginger's there done up in a Barbie pink dress. And then went off. You know, climate change is something we have done to ourselves. But sometimes I see how stupid people are and how easily people consume and embrace and identify with idiotic issues. Maggots are burning Barbies now. A few weeks ago, they were machine gunning cases of Bud Light. They got mad at their favorite place to eat, Jesus Chicken, Chick-fil-A. Because Chick-fil-A has an executive department of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Because apparently there are people of color, and I don't know how, gay people who work for Chick-fil-A. Do you think the puppet masters who run the right wing know that their best dollar and their best means of keeping their mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing maggot base engaged is to keep them in a permanent state of outrage? We talk about some outrageous things here. We talk about some things that are heartbreaking. We talk about things that are anger-inducing. But we do not make it our identity. How do these people live in a state of perpetual fury? Because if I get furious for too long, it starts taking a negative toll on my well-being. Makes me sick. And yet, there they are, day after day after day after day after day after day. I don't, you know, it's cynical, it's cruel. And it's who they are. I genuinely don't understand. And a couple last things. You know, we've asked on a number of occasions here how it is that Steve Bannon, having been convicted of felony contempt of Congress, is still walking around free. Because he is, when almost anyone else in the same or similar circumstances would be already serving his prison sentence. Well, I wonder if he's a little nervous. Because he's not just convicted of the contempt of Congress charge. The man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells is also charged in a fundraising scam. Called We Build the Wall. Now, as his presidency wound down, the Mango Mussolini of MAGA Loco pardoned him on the federal charges. But then the district attorney of Manhattan, Alvin Bragg, turned around and indicted him, or the grand jury did, indicted Bannon, for money laundering, also connected with the We Build the Wall scam. Juan Merchan will hear the case, try the case, next May. Well, last October, his co-conspirator, Timothy Shea, Bannon's co-conspirator, was found guilty on two counts of conspiracy and one count of obstruction of justice. In federal court. He was sentenced today. U.S. District Judge Annalisa Torres found that Timothy Shea helped his co-conspirators launder money that they had looted from the donors who were dumb enough to give to We Build the Wall, because maggots are a simple lot and walk around with their pockets wide open to be picked. And, you know, as the saying goes, I suppose sheep were made to be shorn. They claimed all the funds would go to build the wall. And frankly, the maggots who who got hoodwinked in it, it deserved it, because building the wall was an essentially racist notion in the first place, xenophobic notion. But Timothy Shea, for instance, kept $180,000 for himself. And so U.S. District Judge Annalisa Torres agreed with the sentencing request of the U.S. Attorney's Office. She said they hurt us all by eroding the public's faith in the political process. And then she handed Timothy Shea 5 years in the joint. She also sentenced the leader of the campaign, Brian Colfage. Colfage? Whoa. Trowelfaz? Sorry, the cartoons intrude into my brain. And Andrew Badalato. They pleaded guilty. They weren't found guilty at trial. Colfage got 4.25 years in the federal stir, and Andrew Badalato got 3 years. I don't know what the sentencing parameters are for money laundering as a state charge in New York, but if the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells gets sentenced in New York, we're talking about some pretty not nice prisons. Nice prisons generally don't exist in the United States, but worse is a sliding scale. Bannon will do his time in state prison, whereas Colphage and Badalato are going to do federal time, which might wind up just being a club fed, which is still prison. And one last thing, just to line up with the what I said about how easy it is to con a maggot. Interviewed by the Washington Post, Terry White, who is disabled and retired, told the Post that he watched the, and we've mocked these things for years, buy gold now ads. Buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best hedge against inflation. This is a limited time offer. Now, Terry White sunk $174,000 of his retirement into gold coins that were hustled to him via Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. He lost $70,000 on it. Because, well, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. But he's a maggot, and he watched Fox News, and so therefore he was a sheep to be shorn, because that's how Fox News looks at its viewers. And he sunk the $174,000 into Lear Capital. He told the Washington Post, Terry White did, that,
well, I believed Fox wouldn't take a commercial like that unless it was legitimate.
Oh, you pitiful thing. Meanwhile, Terry White's wife, Jean, who has probably given Terry no small amount of shit because he's ruined their future, Jean said Fox News was negligent for airing gold coin ads that bilk the marks, I mean viewers. Yeah, because Terry White never dreamed for an instant that Lear Capital would charge a 33% commission on every transaction. And so the article in the Post points out that Lear Capital and other grifts like it have absolutely blanketed right-wing media outlet airwaves, because it's an easy hustle. It's taking candy from a baby. An analysis by the Post of political newsletters, social media podcasts, and a national database of television ads collected by the company Ad Impact found that pitches to invest in gold coins are a daily presence in media that caters to a right-wing audience and often echo conservative talking points about looming economic and societal collapse. The Post found no similar ads for gold retirement investments in mainstream or left-wing media sources in the database. Although I confess that back when it was a going concern, Horn Nutraceuticals did quite a brisk business in Alabama sex clams. I'm kidding. On the one hand, I want to pity the Terry Whites of the world. This would be a much better country if we had people who were better at critical thinking. Terry White obviously wasn't. Terry White approached viewing Fox News TV Radio Rwanda as if it were a legitimate enterprise and not a sickening money hustle enabled by the Telecommunications Act of 1996. There's not an ad on Fox that isn't a bilk, that isn't a hustle, that isn't a con, that isn't a game with a marked deck or craps with loaded dice or a break on the roulette wheel. The BB guns in the shooting gallery all have bent barrels, and there's no way anybody's ever going to shoot out that little red star. Yeah, I think the worst that the left does is, you know, hustling stupid beats. That was the inspiration behind things like Alabama sex clams. Meanwhile, here we sit. $1,964 behind in trying to survive this little 20-year experiment in broadcasting. And I loathe talking about it. See, the Hannity job never has to do that for Rupert, because the Hannity job is a multimillionaire thanks to Rupert. And, well, thanks to the ad fees paid by people like Lear Capital that's based on the money that they bring in from rubes like Terry White. A lot more straightforward here. It's not a con, it's not a dodge. It's just a matter of saying, hey, I hope we can keep this all going. Now, Emilio asking, isn't Lear Capital a subsidiary of Lewd Swindle? Last cowbell of the evening, Emilio, and it's all yours. Perpetual Anger, Lee in New York, says, obligatory Star Trek reference, yes, another one, The Cage, original pilot. Talosians cannot read primitive emotions, but Vena said that you cannot keep it up. Talosians wear you down. Apparently, without Talosians, humans can keep focused on the primitive emotion of anger. Oh, that's a good obligatory Star Trek reference, Lee. Thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs got us down to $1,939. Thank you, Ralphs. So, that means tomorrow's fundraising goal will be at $2,239. Oh, and Randy Radar with a final note. That's just it, Robin. The American education system doesn't train people in critical thinking. Trained me pretty much from the beginning. I wonder what changed. Huh. I graduated high school not quite 6 months after old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, was sworn in as President of the United States. It's when we stopped teaching civics. It's when we stopped teaching economics. But, yeah, it may be the modern educational system. It may be, Randy. But it may be parents, too. I was taught early on that there ain't no such thing as a free lunch, and if something seems too good to be true, that it most assuredly is. Sumon says, gold. A simple auto-generated graph on Yahoo or Google Finance will tell anyone that gold is not some sort of great investment. Buffett mentions this almost every time he talks. Fox News has truly brainwashed people to the maximum extent. This is sad. It is. But it is also, in Terry White's case, there talking to the Post, an exemplary display of the truth of W.C. Fields' first commandment. You can't cheat an honest man. Now, honest people can be hoodooed. They can be deliberately misled. But in things like get-rich-quick, buy-gold schemes, the only reason Terry White purchased gold was because, A, he detrimentally relied upon Fox News as having vetted its commercials. And Fox is a wounded animal right now, and there's probably a lawsuit involved somewhere in this story. But Terry White also saw it as a means of having money when the Biden economy collapses, which means that he was inherently his bias got him into it. He believed with the poison that he was poured into his brain and Fox, and that primed him to be plucked like a chicken. And there he is. So that's it. Thanks, everybody. If you're listening live, thank you for taking time to do so. If you listen to the podcast, please like and subscribe and leave a comment. Share it with your friends. Tell people about this little discussion. Thank you to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Each and every one of you is why this program continues to exist. And that's no joke. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Let me check in here. Thanks for being here, Roger. Thank you. And, hey, there's Will. Will in Southern California. Great to see you, my friend. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Like I said, like and subscribe, please. Pretty please. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster if it's available to you. Wear your mask, especially around maggots, because they don't give a damn about anybody but themselves, and they're even willing to die to prove their allegiance to the Mango Mussolini of MAGA lardass. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, maintain your social distance. And, of course, if somebody comes towards you saying, buy gold now, there's never been a better time to buy gold. This will not remain the case. Gold is your best hedge against inflation when the Biden economy collapses. Well, avoid that Fox News advertiser like the plague. Because they are. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.